Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Agenda review. Would the commission like to revise the order of any of the items on the agenda? Community comments and suggestions? Anybody in the audience that would like to speak on anything that's not on the agenda tonight? Now would be the time to step forward. And seeing none, I'll close the community comments. Written communications, we got received one memorandum after the agenda was published. Consent agenda. Approval of the minutes for May 3rd. Is there any corrections or additions?
I didn't see any.
Okay.
Second.
Been moved and second to approve the minutes of May 3rd. All in favor? Aye.
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 Motion carries. A, public hearings, continued consideration of appeal to Planning Commission, 16002, Architectural Review, 15011, Minor Exception, 16001, 1 foot reduction on side yard setback and 2 foot reduction on front yard setback for a two-story residence and attached secondary unit located at 306 Short Street. Applicant Cindy Knott. I have a staff report, please.
Excuse me, sorry. Yes, this is Appeal 1602, Appeal of the Architectural Review 15001 and Minor Exception 16001 for the new two-story residence and attached secondary dwelling unit. So this project is located at 306 Short Street, close to the intersection of Poole and Short. The property is zoned multifamily, surrounding uses being retail and residential uses, almost primarily, with the car dealership to the west there. The proposed project is a new single-family home with an attached secondary dwelling unit. It's a 6,777-square-foot lot, 1,836-square-foot single-family home, 396-foot secondary dwelling unit, and a 462-square-foot garage. Those do add up to 2,694. Which is just under 0.4 for the floor area ratio, which is the required number in the village. This is the site plan of the project. You may have noted that the minor exception was included on this project. The minor exception was originally for setback reductions on the front and side yards. Due to revisions in the plans to conform with floor area ratio regulations in the village, those minor exceptions are no longer necessary. The plans no longer violate the front or side yard setbacks. They are 10'6" from the side, and 21 with the overhang we'll discuss from the front yards. That is merely in here as a formality at this point. So, as I said earlier, the project is zoned multifamily, which is to provide for a variety of residential uses, encourage diversity in housing types with enhanced amenities, and provide transition between the higher intensity of the village and lower intensity residential uses. It's also located in the historic character overlay and is subject to the design guidelines for the area. The project is constructed in a fairly typical craftsman style. It is two stories, the front story near the deck being the secondary dwelling units, and the rear second story being additional bedrooms for the home. You can see the varied facades. There are front-facing garages on the front of the structure, which we will discuss. Typical hardboard siding, pitched gables, and a fairly narrow design. The lot is only 50 feet wide, and in the multifamily zone, you have 10-foot setbacks on either side, which allows for only a 30-foot building envelope on this project. So you notice it is a long and narrow design. One of the main reasons for the appeal for this project is the front-facing garages. As noted in the village design guidelines, one and two car garages shall be detached if feasible. If infeasible, they shall be attached garages are preferred to be side or rear loaded, or if street-facing, shall be recessed from the front building elevation, a minimum of 5 feet with deep roof overhangs and smaller single bay doors. So as you see on this project, the garages are front-facing. Staff did find in the size of the project where we were working and considering the project, We decided it would be infeasible to side load or rear load these garages. It would require shrinking the properties or the project significantly. Additionally, with only a 30-foot building envelope, a 12-foot driveway along the side of the property to access our side or rear loaded garage would leave you with a building envelope of only 18 feet. Additionally, nearly the backyard would be dedicated to entirely concrete and garage space, especially if detached in the rear. As I stated earlier, the minor exception is no longer necessary. The plan fits all necessary setbacks. In terms of landscaping, fairly simple. A few new fruitless olive trees and Pride of Californias. They are also proposing some drought-tolerant ground cover, and they will be required to meet the state model water-efficient landscaping ordinance. So this project came in front of ARC three times. January 11th, 2016, it came and the front-facing garage was slightly different from what you see today. The overhang did not exist. It was a far simpler design. So they requested on a 5-0 voice vote that they come back with a more articulated garage and explore the possibilities of side and rear loading. They returned February 22nd with designs. No majority opinion was reached at that time. The ARC split 2-2, with one of the members not present at the meeting. And they voted 4-0 to continue to allow for a full member vote. It did end up being approved March 7th on identical designs, including the minor exceptions at that time. For front and side yard setbacks, the dissension votes were due to disagreements on whether side or rear loading garages would be feasible. They felt that they were an option that was not explored enough on original designs. In terms of CEQA review under 15303A, single family residences are exempt from any environmental impact reports. And this project was publicly noticed on Friday, April 22nd, 2016. At the May 3rd public hearing, this project was continued to a date specified of May 17th due to revisions in the footprint of the project to correct for FAR floor area ratio issues. And the agenda for this project was published on the 13th. Also, the letter you received from the appellant on April 28th has been the only communication we've received on the project from the public. So staff's recommendation is to adopt a resolution denying the appeal 16-002 and approve the architectural review and the minor exception at this time. And staff is happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Does the commissioners have any comments or questions? John, please.
I know you said you're going to get into more detail on the canopy over the garage. From what I tell, the setback is 26 feet to the face of the first garage, and then there's separate garage doors, and there's another step back of 2 feet for that other garage, making that 28.
That's correct.
I'm assuming 2 feet. And then I didn't see a dimension on the site plan, a setback to the column. How far is that? Did you say 21? Did I hear that right?
Yes, it stretches to 21. You can see it on the south elevation here. It's marked 5 feet to the further out garage, and will be 7 feet to the further setback garage.
Okay, and our front setback is?
The front setback on that property would be 20 feet.
Okay, I just want to be on the same page. That's my question, thank you.
I have no question.
Mr. Payne?
No comment this time.
Okay, this time I'll open the public hearing, and Mr. Fraser, would you like to speak to us first?
That's just a copy of pretty much, I'm not a public speaker, so that's just a copy of what I was going to say. Commissioners and staff, my name is Dave Fraser. I live at 302 Short Street in the historic village of Aroa Grande, and my home is the 100-plus-year-old Craftsman bungalow located to the north of the proposed development, just adjacent to it. Thank you for considering my appeal. Appreciate your role in addressing the concerns I raised in my earlier letter regarding the FAR, revising the plans to comply with the FAR as described in the design guidelines and standards for the historical character alleviated some of the concerns raised in my letter. However, several other concerns were not addressed by these revisions. My objection to the street-facing garages, as we discussed earlier, of this design remain. I continue to contend that it is feasible to have a detached garage in the lot. The details of my opinion can be found in the attachment 5 of the memo from today. I brought two books with me with the historical designs. It's over 150 floor plans from the period, and they're all unique, but one thing they have in common is they all have entrances to the street, front-facing entrances, so that's just something I'd like to point out. Another concern continues to be the setback a little bit of the stairs, along with the landscaping proposed to mask them. Now, I was under the impression, you just said it was fruitless olive trees. Now, I was under the impression it was a Catalina cherry that was going to be there. If it is, in fact, the olive tree, some of my concerns are alleviated. But now that the proposed design complies with the FAR, the only part of the proposed design that encroaches on the setbacks is the staircase, as seen in the depiction on the north and east elevation page. I understand that the stairs are permitted to enter the setback up to 5 feet. However, because the staircase appears to be enclosed in hardboard siding, it's essentially a wall, not really a staircase. The articulation of the garage on the south side is such that it would allow the same staircase to be located on that side without encroaching on anyone's setback, mine or the neighbor to the south. I'll skip the part about the tree, other than the placement of that is in the extreme corner of the northeast side, which does obstruct views from the two windows in my front bedroom. Also, I didn't see in the original submitted plans, they had preliminary grading and drainage plans. I didn't see them in these updated plans. I don't know if they remain the same. If they do, my concerns about the drainage and potential runoff remain that I described in attachment 5 of the first letter that I submitted. Thank you for your time and considering my concerns, and I'm sure we can come to an agreement that would satisfy all parties. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the applicant or the appellant? John?
So you're directly to the north?
Directly to the north, right.
And when you're in your residence looking at that elevation with the staircase, from is that from a room or a bedroom?
Yeah, three bedrooms line that wall.
Okay. And your major objection there is the staircase. And the perception of that, correct?
Right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Payne, any questions?
No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to address this project?
Good evening. I'm Cindy Knott. I'm one of the owners of the lot and the project. Also present with me today are Michael Fisher, our general contractor from Beachfront Builders, and Greg Soto, our architect, if you have any questions of them along the way. I think Sam actually touched on the majority of the concerns that it appears to be in the appeal. I have just a couple of really short comments so I don't take up too much of your time. There was a significant amount of time that went in from our part and with our architect and contractor considering the feasibility of a side-loading garage or a back garage, because that was actually our preference. The first set of plans that we actually submitted to the city showed side-loading garages, and we were under the impression at that time that we had 5-foot setbacks on both sides. Turns out that we had 10-foot setbacks, so that plan had to go away. So with a 10-foot setback, about a 21-foot depth to a garage, and then there's a minimum of a 24-foot turnaround space for garages, we hit right around 55 feet. So a side-loading garage was not possible. We then went on and considered whether the feasibility of putting the garages in the back, perhaps like a detached garage, putting the secondary unit on top of that. What we ran into with that was significantly more coverage of the lot area with pavement, turnaround with spot. It also took away completely any opportunity for a real backyard for the main house, because the main house would then be overlooking the turnaround area, which again was 24 to 26 feet by whatever. So in terms of the desirability of whoever lives in that house, we certainly didn't see that as an option. The other thing it did was it put the secondary unit overlooking a commercial area, which is what is in the back of our lot, rather than having it in the front and being able to enjoy a little bit more of the feel of the village and the streets. And we're only, I think, maybe a block and a half from the park, so they can, you know, sort of enjoy that piece. So there was a significant amount of time, attention, that went into considering how else we could do the garages. When we moved to a front garage in the front, what we did was we looked around the village and specifically looked around this area of Short Street and then the parallel street is Mason, to see what we were looking at. And about half of the houses, give or take, have front-loading garages. So we were now, you know, going to be the only house in the village with a front-loading garage, if that was our only possibility. The other thing we looked at was, obviously, the craftsman style is throughout the village. Also, obviously, is the shed roof that we have coming out over the top 5 feet in front of the front-loading garages can also be found throughout the village as well. So what we did was, in working with the architectural committee, working with our contractor and the architect, did I say something wrong?
No. The 3 minutes is up, but go ahead since you're the...
Oh, okay. Thank you. So we explored pictures. You're welcome to view these if you'd like of at least some of the other houses in the village area that have the front-loading garages. The one that really caught our attention and the one that we tried to be the most consistent with is actually only about 4 or 5 doors away from our lot. And this shows pretty much the same design with the front-loading garages. It has the small, I'm not sure if it's a deck area or a balcony area on this particular house, and then the windows set back. So, again, in trying, knowing that we had to do with a front-loading garage, what we tried to do was to make that as consistent as possible with the surrounding area, especially those two streets of Short Street and Mason Street, which is where the lot is, and in keeping with some of the other developments and some of the other lots that are already there and built out. So I'm happy to take questions. I'm not a contractor, so if you have questions of our contractor or architect, either one, they're certainly available to you.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
Thank you, John. On the stairway leading up, it looks like there's a couple posts there and the stair going up, but I didn't see a dimension on the plan, and maybe your architect can tell me, unless you know, how wide is that stairway, and or what's the dimension from the stairway to the property line?
I am definitely not the right person to answer your question, so let me defer to the contractor or our architect.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Greg Soto. Familiar faces here. Okay, the width of the stairwell or staircase is 3.5 feet, and it will be going into the setback 3.5 feet. And we are allowed to go into that setback.
So right now we're showing 10.6.
That's going to be 10 feet.
It's going to be. You go 3.5 feet in.
Well, we're going to have the setback at 10. Okay. We're going to change that to 10, and then it'll be 3.5 into that setback.
So the setback from the property line to the stairwell is 7 feet, correct?
It would be 6.5.
6.5. And I don't know whether this is a question for you or for staff, but when we put in that additional living quarters, how many parking places are required?
One. Just one.
For that, when I was looking at the floor plan, is it your intention to put a wall between the two garages and there's...
Oh, no, no. You need two for the residents. And then one, we're going to have an outside parking space to the side. That was, it's paved. It's a paved area. Pavers.
The reason why I asked the question, because the door looks like it's leading to the studio. And my concern is if the garage gets divided in half, that leaves one for the residence and one for the studio.
No, that's not the intention.
Okay.
No.
So I was just asking that. We'll talk about that more here. Okay. Thank you.
Where on the site plan does it show that the additional parking space is?
It's pavers. As you face the garage from the street to the left-hand side, you'll see pavers.
So they're going to have to come in the driveway and turn
slightly
into
to the left, right, exactly. And if you notice, this, I can't remember the distance, but there's quite a distance between the sidewalk or the street and the front of the garage, so that'd be plenty of space for the car to back out if there's a car possibly parked in the driveway. So they'll be able to scoot out. It's not just a 20-foot setback, right, Sam? It's further back. Yeah.
My other comment is I don't think the elevations really depict the craftsman style. Craftsman style has larger columns, you know, squared off at the bottom and narrowing up at the top, and yours appear to just look like wood poles.
The ones in front are thicker. That's about the only ones I have, I think. And then the posts for the stairs are just regular posts, so we can thicken those up. But the ones in front are thicker.
Well, I'm looking at them, but they're the same dimension from top to bottom, where craftsman style, the base of your post is wider and then tapers as it goes to the top.
Well, we could do that. We could try to do that, but we're limited in our space there.
I'm going to say the way you've got it with your garage, two garage doors there.
Yeah, we are limited in space right there. And I think the ones that the picture that Cindy showed were just like that, I believe. That's where I got the idea from. That was from that photograph.
I'm not really pleased with the elevation on the front with the two garage doors facing. I mean, it just looks like the house has two garage doors.
I could taper a little. I could taper it some.
Does anybody else like to address the commission on this project? Seeing none, I'll close the public comment. Bring it back to the commission. Is there any questions you want to do before we go into comments? Anything else, staff?
Well, question for staff. What's the minimum guest stall size, and is it allowed to occur in the front yard setback?
It is not allowed to occur in the front yard setback. It will need to be... Let's see here. I'm not exactly sure how long this distance is right here, but I do believe it is going to be more than the 18 feet, which would be for a parking space, which would keep them out of the front yard setback.
So is that, what, 9 by 18?
Correct, yes.
Because it's not really clearly shown, and I think that's our confusion. We see a reference note that says parking space pavers, but it really doesn't depict the parking place. And it's actually on the opposite side from the entry that goes into the studio, and I kind of echo Fowler Payne's comments on the parking. Just trying to understand it. I'll start. I'm talking. I appreciate all the work that the owner has gone into that, and I just did some quick math here too. If you have a 21-foot garage, and you add the 10 feet for a setback requirement, you're at 31 feet, and you need 24 feet to back up, which is 55-foot minimum on the lot width that you need to do a side-loaded garage. So obviously, the site doesn't suit itself to a side-loaded garage. I mean, it's mathematically, unless they're looking for an exception for a setback to be reduced to 5 feet. So in my opinion, I think the solution that they're proposing is is a better solution in terms of the side yard setback. I can appreciate the front articulation that's gone into the front elevation, doing the offsetting garages and making it look like it's smaller openings and less like a garage, and I can appreciate the overhang. And what you really don't see in the elevation is the offset. Well, here you do. You see the shade and shadow, and a shadow being cast and feeling more like a building element coming forward. To me, it feels less than a garage. What I have an issue with is the stairs, especially to a guest going up to a deck and looking at the visual overlook possibility to the neighbor, and the neighbor has a legitimate concern with the stairs. And now the other issue with the guest parking, I'm not sure that fully works. When you see something and smell something and looks like something, to me it looks, the way the door's set up going right directly underneath the stairs, that there would be a wall put between the two garages, and that would be exclusive for the studio unit up above. And then if it was my home, I can see myself parking in that space, in the guest space, and going right near the front door all the time. So I would like to see a condition that garage doesn't get converted into two little garages. I don't know how you enforce that, but that's my issue. And then the other issue is the visual overlook. It's almost like the double car garage can be slid all the way over to the south property line, and the guest stall be put on the other side, and then the stairs would be further set back, and then the guest parking would be on the other side. That's a solution, but I'm not the designer. I'm just throwing that out there. But it could probably be taken care of with the appropriate landscaping to break down the scale of that and to screen that and to screen the going up and down the stairs right next to the neighbor. Those are my comments.
I got a question of staff. Since this is advertised as a approval or denial of appeal, how much can we do under this to ask for changes or anything in the project?
The approval authority essentially lies with you now, since it's been appealed to your commission. So you may condition the project accordingly, or direct that a portion of it be re-reviewed by ARC.
Thank you. Glenn, do you have any comments?
Well, I'm certainly sympathetic with the intense development, because this obviously is going to be building out this vacant lot to its maximum ability. I guess where I'm falling in this decision is the vacant lot has existed there for a long time, and I know the neighbor has enjoyed that vacant lot there for a long time. The project, with a few minor exceptions, appears to be really fully compliant with the current code, and I know the secondary units are really being encouraged as far as, you know, providing additional quote-unquote affordable housing alternatives within the village, and it's pretty tough for me to support the appeal because this project is so compliant. I do have some questions around, you know, the overall layout. I'm guessing at this point the staircase is on the north side rather than on the south side, where it would certainly be adjacent to the parking area for the apartment, because it would invade that parking space for the apartment and essentially diminish or, you know, remove that parking space. It's my gut guess is, from a practical standpoint, whoever is in that apartment is probably going to be parking over on the right side, unless they're being harassed by the homeowner to park over than that paver area. That's, to me, would certainly be the default if I was living there. But as far as the design and use of an existing parcel and things of that nature, I'm not in favor of prolonging any more design and approval process. I'm going to support denying the appeal. Those are my comments.
Thank you. Commissioner Payne?
Was there any consideration taken to tandem parking, or are they not? Are we not accepting that? I know we've done some in the village, and that's for planning.
In response to your question, Commissioner Fowler Payne, tandem parking is identified in the design guidelines as an option for secondary dwelling units. It's clearly identified that a tandem parking situation does require a conditional use permit.
It just seems if there was a tandem parking, you wouldn't have such a massive garage face on the street side, and it appears that there's room in the back to push the unit back further. They wouldn't lose any square footage on the unit, which would then open it up to give a decent parking outside without this odd-shaped third space. I don't know. Maybe the architect had some reason for not even wanting to approach tandem parking, or... It seems to have worked out in a couple other incidents.
Hello, my name is Michael Fisher. I'm the general contractor. I believe we spoke with staff in regards to the tandem garage, and we kind of seemed to find that it was, in a sense, not feasible, and nor we'd have to get a conditional use permit. And I believe we all found that that wasn't the best route to go, because we seemed like we kind of got up against a couple walls when we looked into it.
Well, I just felt that it would take away from the massing of the garage doors in the front on the street side.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying with the massing, but the width of that garage door now is as narrow as you can get in a garage right now. So it's actually, if anything, a real narrow front-facing garage. So massing, I'm not sure about the scale that you're thinking. And as far as the extra parking for the guest unit, we actually worked with staff, and we all came up with the going through, I think, the architecture review process, that the size of that paved area did meet the 18 feet by 9 feet parking area. So we went through that process a couple of times as well and redesigned it, matter of fact, to satisfy that as well.
Well, I could see where there'd be a problem. If you've got your car in the garage and you had guests and they parked in your driveway, then there is no way that that third space could be accessed.
Well, there's still enough room for a walkway, but I hear what you're saying, but there's still enough room to walk either on side of each side of where they're going to park to get to the front door.
Mike, no more comments.
Thank you.
Just a couple. I was concerned about the front-loading garages and drove the neighborhood, and I was actually surprised how many there are. There's a lot of them down there. So I don't think that this is going to change the precedent or anything like that. And the guidelines says that it's acceptable. So I don't have a problem with that. Would I like something else? Yes. But on this small lot, I don't see that it's feasible. The stairs, I really had a real concern about those stairs when we were talking about narrowing that setback to a foot, because that would have even made it closer and a narrower passageway. But now that setback is 10 foot, instead of the 9 that they requested, I'll concede that it will work. The design of the building, of the house, architectural review looked at this thing on three separate occasions and concluded that it met the guidelines, so I'm not about to change their opinion. One of the things I didn't see in here, and it's been pretty common, is about underground and utilities. Was that ever brought up, or because it would be difficult, but it doesn't give them exemption in here or even mention it, and that's the reason I wanted to see, you know, what transpired that is not in here.
It's in the municipal code that the addition of 100 square feet of habitable space requires the undergrounding of utilities. That's part of the reason why it's not in the condition of approval. You know, we play that kind of game back and forth of, do we include municipal code requirements in the conditions or not? So the utilities will be required to be placed underground.
Okay. And there hasn't been a request not to?
Correct.
I thought that's maybe why they located the poles on the plan. It's because this is, okay. I'm ready to move forward and deny the appeal. I think the setback, since we don't have to do the setbacks and the FAR is adjusted, I think it meets the city's code. I noticed on this resolution, that first whereas, I don't think now when we're talking about really should be part of this resolution. Since we've taken that out, am I reading it wrong?
I believe that first recital on the resolution is simply stating the project that was received on October 14th, and that was the application at that time. And then the findings for approval reiterate the approval you're making this evening. So I think it's fine to stay.
Okay. Anybody like to make a motion?
I still have issues.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
And maybe staff can help me with the definition of the parking. Is it two cars covered for the residents, or can it be one car covered if there are one open?
I'm sorry, I'll repeat. Is it two car covered for the residents and then one outdoor for the studio, or can it be one covered and one outdoor for the residents and one covered for the studio?
For the primary residence, it's two spaces and an enclosed garage. The secondary dwelling unit allows one open air, uncovered parking space. So as proposed, it does meet the municipal code.
So like I mentioned before, it looks as if the way the door is positioned right underneath the stairs to the guest unit or the studio, that's easy access right up to the studio. I would like to see a condition placed that a partition cannot be put in the center of the garage and divided into two garages, just for that purpose. And then I think there needs to be some break with the stairway, because right now I look at the landscape plan, there's no landscaping shown between the stairs. There's just some pavers. And there needs to be some kind of landscaping or something hiding the stairs and the deck going up for a visual overlook to the neighbor to the north. I would like to see those two conditions added. That's my take.
If you want staff to craft those for you, and then you're going to make the motion? Is that
well, it's for discussion, huh?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I don't have a problem with those two conditions. They're pretty minor, I think, in their scope, and certainly appropriate, I think, given the nature. And it sounds like they're really not an issue for the applicants as well. So I think just adding those as conditions, I don't have a problem adding those as conditions.
John, in your profession, how wide do those stairs have to be?
3 feet clear on the inside, 3 foot four, 3 foot six. On the face of the outside of the street.
Thank you.
So is there going to be room on the other side of those stairs where the walkway is to even landscape between?
Yeah.
It looks like it's pretty tight. Have the fence.
6.5 feet.
I mean, we can even request that it goes back to ARC for...
6.5 feet between the stairs and the property line.
Yeah, but it looks like it appears they're having a walkway through there.
Okay. You want to make a motion and then we'll have a discussion?
Are we done with the discussion?
We may have more discussion after your motion.
Well, I'll make the motion. Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Roy Grande denying appeal case number 16002 and approving architectural review 15011 and minor exception 16001 located at 306 Short Street, applied for by Cindy Knott, appealed by Dave Frazier, with the added conditions being number one, that the garage be prohibited from being able to build a wall separating the two garage spaces and allowing the studio to occupy half the garage. And then the second condition to be added is to provide sufficient landscaping and height to screen the stairs and the landing going up to the upper deck. And that would be on the north side of the property in that 7.5 feet of landscape area.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Mack?
Aye.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Feller-Payne?
No.
And Vice Chair Keene?
Yes. Okay. Move on to 9A. It's a workshop to take public comment on the draft environmental impact report for the East Cherry Avenue specific plan project. For what?
For public comment yet? No? Okay, sorry. Thank you. Certainly.
The commissioners have met with OASIS for a presentation, informational, on this project. For the audience's information, we have all met with OASIS. Thank you.
Let me clarify that. We all met individually, not collectively. I had a separate invitation, and I did attend as well.
Thank you. And this evening, making the presentations is John Reckenbach. He's the staff project manager for the city. And the EIR consultant, Julia, will be giving the actual EIR presentation. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to John Reckenbach.
Thank you, Teresa. Tonight, what we want to do is to some extent present the project, the East Cherry Avenue Specific Plan project, but it's really not to consider the merits of the project or even discuss the project in any way. It's really to get public input on the environmental impact report for the project, which I want to describe briefly. And in general terms, the draft environmental impact report needs to circulate for 45 days. It's been circulating since April 8th. Technically, the public comment period will end on May 26th. It was shown as May 23rd, but the State Clearinghouse, which records this, actually has it as May 26th, which is the period in which public comments can be received. And public comments can take the form of emails, letters, any kind of communication. And tonight, input from the public and, for that matter, from the Planning Commission with regard to contents of the environmental impact report. Julia Pujol is going to go through this in a bit, but first I just want to talk briefly for the benefit of the public mostly about what the project is and then get into the environmental impact report. I think it's very important also to understand that the conclusions of the draft environmental impact report and the mitigation measures that are contained in there and that Julia will go through can be modified, could be modified between now and the final environmental impact report based on the comments that we received during this period. The intent of any of those revisions in general, if the mitigation measures do change, if they accomplish the same purpose as what's stated here and can still mitigate the impacts, that's okay. If there are issues that the public believes that were not covered or not covered adequately, that's the kind of commentary we're looking for, and that's what the final environmental impact report is all about, to address those changes. So very briefly, I want to go through the project. It's the East Cherry Avenue specific plan, which covers three distinct areas. The map up here shows where it's located, which is essentially on the south side of East Cherry Avenue, east of Traffic Way, very near the Vagabond Mobile Home Park, just to the east and a little bit to the north. Within that area, you see it's broken into three sub-areas. That's for planning purposes because it's essentially three different projects within the environmental impact report and the specific plan. I'll go through each one of those. It's a 15.29-acre site, and in total, the three sub-areas could include, let's go back for a bit, the area on the far left, which we're calling sub-area 1, that would potentially contain a hotel, 100-room hotel, and 4,000-square-foot restaurant. The central area, sub-area 2, actually we can go like this. Well, let's just go here for a moment, would be up to 58 single-family homes. And the third, sub-area 3, would be a community center, up to 10-unit senior housing building, historic orchard and garden. That's the Japanese Welfare Association property. Ultimately, the specific plan is a regulatory document, and it deals with the guidelines and the standards and builds on the general plan for development in that area. The reason why there's a specific plan is because it's called for in the general plan to provide a little bit better framework for the infrastructure planning for the entire area. This slide shows a detail of the proposed plan for the central, that is to say sub-area 2, and the eastern portion of the site, which is sub-area 3. Right now, for your purposes, it's just illustrative, but to show you how the lots would lay out. And this is what the environmental impact report studied. This shows sub-area 1, the proposed hotel and restaurant on the corner there, Traffic Way being to the left side of the screen, and East Cherry to the top. So we're looking north is to the top of the page. Again, somewhat conceptual at this point. This, again, is the lot layout as proposed for sub-area 2. And this is the layout conceptually for sub-area 3 on the Japanese Welfare Association property over there. What I'd like to do now is, you may have questions about that as we go along, but really is to turn it over to Julia, who will go through each of the issues that were examined in the environmental impact report, go through some of the conclusions it drew, talk in brief about some of the mitigation measures that are proposed. But at that point, we're going to sit back and take notes from people. It's really, at this point, I think it's premature to actually engage in a conversation about the mitigation measures or any of the impacts. What we'd like to do is take everybody's input, all of which will be put into the final environmental impact report and responded to formally at that time. We can clarify a few things for you along the way, but that's where we're at this point. So, Julia.
Thank you, John. Good evening, commissioners, and thank you everybody for coming. My name is Julia Pujol, and I'm going to briefly summarize the environmental issues we analyzed in the impact report. We analyzed 11 environmental resources, most of which we found to be less than significant with mitigation, with the exception of air quality and transportation and traffic. And so I'll go through them one by one. For aesthetics and visual resources, essentially the lot is an undeveloped three parcels that are agricultural largely in character. and it will be developed with commercial and residential uses. Commercial uses will be up to 3 stories, residential up to 2. And so the project design is conceptual at this point. And we looked at basically the change of character, and also development has the potential to block some distant views of topography. We found this to be less than significant, and we have mitigation recommendations for the ARC to consider things like massing, siding, and height, as well as sources of nighttime lighting to minimize street lights and security lighting as much as possible. For agricultural resources, we did a LISA analysis, and based on the size of the site and the water availability, we found that the site itself was considered less than significant. And within the site are agricultural resources. There's 12.85 acres of prime farmland, which is designated by the Department of Conservation. Underlying that prime farmland, there's 14 acres of prime soils. So on the figure on the left shows the prime farmland in green, and the figure in the left on the right shows prime agricultural soils in purple. Currently, the City Council approved a resolution for an off-site agricultural easement for 9.79 acres, and so that would mitigate the loss of agricultural resources for sub-area 2. Sub-area 1 is not zoned for agriculture, even though it is currently has some agricultural uses. It's zoned for traffic mixed use. And so for that reason, we found that it's already earmarked for development, essentially. Sub-area 3 is zoned agricultural. However, there are no existing agricultural uses on sub-area 3. Given that there's prime soils underlying this sub-area, we've included mitigation to the applicant shall mitigate for the at least 1.74 acres of prime soils. Pursuant to General Plan Policy Ag 1-4.2, or any other mitigation that the City Council finds appropriate. Air quality and GHG emissions. We looked at short-term construction emissions. We modeled these with CaliMod. We looked at the placement of sensitive receptors, so essentially residences near US 101, and we analyzed the project's consistency with the Climate Action Plan. All of those we found to be less than significant with construction mitigation and with compliance with APCD rules. However, for long-term operational emissions, we found that long-term emissions would be marginally above the APCD thresholds. And so after the application of mitigation, so mitigations include traffic demand control measures, site considerations. There's a number of measures that are included in this. And also following in part because it would result in long-term operational emissions, the project would be potentially inconsistent with the Clean Air Plan. The APCD's Clean Air Plan analyzes, I suppose, the APCD's Clean Air Plan looks at, projects certain emissions from certain uses of the land, and within the project's proposed uses for the site, with residential and commercial uses, is not consistent with what the 2001 Clean Air Plan assumed in its growth assumptions. It would generate a larger population, it would generate greater traffic, and it would have a more operational use or different residential uses and commercial uses where the Clean Air Plan looks at agriculture. For biological resources, the site contains low-value habitat for agricultural areas and with the rural areas within subarea 3. Development of the project would remove those low-value habitats and would result in some indirect habitats to the oak woodland hillside to the south. However, construction mitigation measures would bring those impacts to less than significant. That includes staging equipment further away from the oak woodland hillside, as well as avoiding migratory bird nesting season when possible, or in conducting pre-construction nesting bird surveys. Hazardous materials, there's a low potential to encounter hazardous materials within the site, given its historic agricultural use. However, the area is within a moderate to high threat fire zone. Given that, we've included mitigation measures to address fire protection issues. So this includes preparation of a wildfire emergency management plan, use of fire-resistant construction materials, annual inspections by the fire department, and fire-resistant landscaping. For hydrology and water quality, impacts include construction runoff and potential drainage impacts from developing the site with more impermeable surfaces with driveways and roadways and concrete rather than the permeable surfaces that it is now. However, impacts would be less than significant. With land use, we looked at policy consistency with a general plan, and those are mostly policies that address environmental resource issues. And these are policies that address environmental resource issues that we looked at in other sections, so I'll kind of breeze over these. Noise for the project includes construction noise and operational noise. Construction noise is temporary. I believe it's an 18-month or so construction period. Operational noise is mostly attributed to traffic, and we found these to be less than significant. We looked at recreation. The project provides 0.35 acres of neighborhood park space. However, given the general plan requirement, there's a need for 0.56 acres of parkland. Therefore, there's a need for an additional 0.21 acres of park space. So we've added mitigation in order to be compliant with that general plan policy and to provide adequate parkland. Transportation and traffic. Under existing conditions, we found that there are currently three intersections that are currently operating at unacceptable LOS level of service. This includes the intersection of West Branch Street and East Branch Street, the intersection of Fair Oaks Avenue and Traffic Way, as well as Fair Oaks Avenue and the US 101 southbound ramp. With project conditions, there would be a significant impact at West Branch Street and East Branch Street. It would add up to 7 seconds delay in the AM hours and 6 seconds delay in the PM hours. We found this impact to be significant after mitigation. The other impacts would add less than a 1 second delay at Fair Oaks Avenue and southbound US 101, and a substantial added delay at Traffic Way. For the significant and unavoidable impact at East Grand Avenue and West Branch Street, we've looked at several options for mitigation measures. And the one that would mitigate the impacts is to create two roundabouts that would direct traffic. However, because this is an unfunded transportation improvement, our mitigation includes to pay the fair share of portion of costs to the roundabouts. And in the meantime, until those are constructed, the residual impact would be significant and unavoidable.
I'd also like to add something here. We know that the roundabout issue is one that's is something that needs to be resolved in terms of the most appropriate way to go. And there's other options that could be considered that may not provide the same level of service but may provide some degree of relief. Point is, this is what's shown as mitigation in the EIR to get you is to where you'd minimize the impact to the greatest degree. But we recognize that there's other solutions that could be considered which may not provide the same level of relief. But we're aware traffic and the mitigation for that is an issue that we need to address carefully through the final EIR.
Great, thank you. The rest of the traffic and transportation impacts we found we could mitigate to a less than significant level, including Fair Oaks Avenue and Traffic Way LOS with the installation of a traffic signal and construction traffic with construction transportation management plan, as well as conflicts with turning movements. And, well, we've found a potential impact with conflicts of turning movements leaving the project site on Traffic Way for within subarea 1. And so with this, we included a recommended mitigation measure for a circulation study to guide ingress and egress. Utilities and public services, the site currently does not have any utility lines. It would require the construction of utility lines. We looked at utility wastewater, water supply, and solid waste capacities within Arroyo Grande and found that construction of the project would not increase demand on utilities of the two above capacity. It would incrementally increase demand for fire and police protection services and public schools, but would not result in significant impacts. Other CEQA considerations, we looked at growth-inducing impacts. The project does include a roadway collector and bike lane leading to the hillside adjacent to the south, which may facilitate development on that hillside in the future. And extension of utility lines through the site.
And I'd also like to clarify that a collector going to the south is intended to be part of a circulation element update for which future development under the general plan could be considered to the south. So this would be a necessary extension to allow that potential to happen. It's not necessary per se to serve this project at a collector level.
Lastly, we looked at a couple of alternatives. The two alternatives we analyzed was the no project. Under the no project, no development would occur within subareas 2 and 3. However, within subarea 1, it is zoned traffic mixed use, and so there is potential for development to occur in accordance with existing zoning. We looked at a reduced development project in order to reduce air quality emissions and traffic. This would reduce the hotel use and restaurant use from a 70-room hotel or a 100-room hotel to a 70-room hotel, would reduce the restaurant size by 1,000 square feet. Subarea 2 would be reduced from 58 single-family homes to 40 single-family homes. And subarea 3 would be no change. With this alternative, we found that this may reduce operational air quality emissions to below the APCD threshold. However, it would still remain inconsistent with APCD plan, clean air plan, given that those uses are not what the clean air plan had intended for that site. In addition, if the reduced development project would reduce traffic impacts, however, there would still be significant unavoidable delays at East Grand Avenue and West Branch Street. Overall, the no project alternative, it would be considered the environmentally superior alternative under CEQA. CEQA allows us to select a development alternative if the no project alternative is found to be the environmentally superior alternative. With that, the reduced development project would be the superior alternative. However, it would still result in significant air quality and transportation impacts. In closing, as John had mentioned before, we're in the draft EIR phase, which is available. There are hard copies available at City Hall and the Public Library, the EIR is also available on the Arroyo Grande Planning website. The intent of this, our purpose for tonight, is to gather public comment. We may not necessarily respond to those comments right now. However, we will respond after the close of the public comment period on May 26th and include those in the final EIR. Thank you. Also, there are public comment cards in the back if you would like to fill one out tonight. Otherwise, you could mail them to City Hall or send or email John Rickenbach. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Juliet. So with that concludes our presentation. Really, we leave it back to you to direct how public input would go, and we're ready to take notes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. If there's any quick questions before we get started from the commission, I'd like to have you address that now. Mr. Mack, do you have?
Yes, I had a few. With the biological resources and the studies that are being conducted, obviously we've had several years of drought. And this is the one good year we're starting to get. I mean, my trees are blooming like crazy. I'm sneezing. I got allergies. What I'm getting at is, have we looked at the pismocarkia on those trees and on that north-facing hillside there? Are any pismocarkia or any kind of endangered plant species? Because this would be the time to do it because it's seasonal.
Right. The biological resources study did not find any endangered or sensitive species within, I think it's at least a half mile radius of the project.
Guess my question is are they going to be looking this season as well?
Well, right now, for the purpose of the EIR, biological survey work that was done didn't specifically look at that. What you're talking about is seasonally timed rare plant surveys. And I think that is most appropriately done prior to development itself, before you do any site clearing and grading. The fact is, the studies that were done didn't actually find any of that. The studies that were done, even if it's in a drought situation, you ought to be able to find at least remnants of pismocarkia, for example. But that's the kind of thing that's appropriately taken up before development occurs. Like right now, wouldn't necessarily be, wouldn't shed any more light on it than terms of the EIR's adequacy than if they were conducted later on. But that said, I register the comment, and we're going to make sure we address that in the EIR. Thanks.
You had a slide up there that indicated 36.22 acre feet per year. Is that cumulative? Is that for all three sub-areas? And would you have information available that would break it down per sub-area that is correct, 36.22 acres on the water demand?
And let me just answer this, too. That information, even if it may be in the EIR as it is, could be easily be derived. But what we'd like to do is record questions that you might have and then sort of answer them all at one time, because I think there might be some overlap and we have a better ability to deal with that. But in general, we don't want to get too deep into the technical questions at this time. We just like to make sure if there's specific concerns, we get them all. We could summarize them at the end, and for things that are easily answered, we could try to address them at that time. That's our ideal way of addressing that.
Maybe I'll do a more general question this time. One of the resources you're indicating that you're studying is lighting from the project. What kind of study are you providing, or information are you providing to the public regarding let's say, light pollutants from the commercial parking lot from the hotel?
As of now, the project design is conceptual. We don't have a lighting plan. However, we do recognize that the project would introduce a new source of nighttime lighting in an area that, or in a site that currently doesn't produce any lighting, and we're sensitive to that. And so our mitigation measure is for the ARC to consider lighting and to allow what is necessary for safety and security. However, anything that is excess or decorative or in excess be considered.
So all the questions we have right now, comments?
Thank you.
Commissioner Martin?
I'm Greg Wilson.
Okay. Commissioner Payne?
I really don't have any comments. I just have concern about the traffic circulation, and I had indicated that before. The traffic circulation in the village right now is not good, and we're just adding 100 motel rooms and whatever, 58 single-family residences going to over-impact what we already are over-impacted. So since the village has been here for over 100 years, they didn't anticipate all this kind of growth when they laid out the circulation plan, so it's just something we have to deal with. That's my main concern.
Thank you. I don't have any comments right now. Let's hear what the public has to say in their comments. Okay. Now would be the time to come forward.
Thank you, Commissioners, and thank you, staff. And I also want to thank Carol Florence and Andy McGonnell for inviting us to some of their meetings. And they seem to have been responsive in some of my concerns. I'm just going to read off some of my concerns so you know also. First of all, I like the reduced development. That's the first time I've heard about that, where they were going to perhaps do 40 homes instead of 58, 70 rooms instead of 100, and a 3,000-square-foot restaurant instead of a 4,000-square-foot restaurant. Because any time that they say less than significant, I always think, to whom? You know, it's less than significant to someone if you don't live here, perhaps. In the Morning Rise development, which Mr. Kaufman, he built, and it's senior housing. It's over there, like off of Farrell, has substandard lots, substandard setbacks, but it's seniors, and so therefore seniors, if they did a development like that here, seniors could get to the village easier. We would have less cars, less traffic, smaller houses. I think they could sell them for the same amount of money because seniors want to live here, and you could they would have less parking, less everything, so it would be a very attractive project, I think. Some of my other things are that originally they said that it was going to be similar to the village. They wanted to keep it with the village, and yet they have originally, and I don't know if this has changed, but 85% two stories. The last meeting I have, they told me, which was wonderful, that they would not put two stories on the front two rows facing Cherry, but it would be in the back of the lot, and if so, that would be great. But all the houses are about 2,800 square feet, which is not keeping with the village. The village has smaller houses, as most of you know. The other concern is always the alleyways. And I know that there's only one, but when you have alleyways, people don't park in the alleyways. They park on the street. A lot of people keep storage in the garages as opposed to cars, with me as an exception because I have a four-car garage. By the way, I live on Cherry Street, 309 East Cherry, so it is a concern to me. The other thing is we have approximately 2,000 to 2,500 cars per day going down Cherry. So when you have 58 houses and it's two stories, so you're going to have young people, which is wonderful, but they'll have kids in school, so they'll have more than two cars as a general rule. And so that will make a significant amount of cars down the street, plus a 100-room hotel. I'm concerned about how many parking places they have for this 100-room hotel because they also have to have parking places for a 4,000-square-foot restaurant. So the other concern is that there's one ingress, one egress on Cherry. But then there's going to have the ingress, egress going up the hill to the Fredericks property. And if they have additional traffic later on, I just can't even imagine that. But maybe I'll be gone. It won't matter. Then what are the other things? Oh, and then they're talking about perhaps a light, a traffic light. Have any of you come to Cherry and 101 when the kids are coming to school in the morning? Oh, my gosh. And a light to back that up. It would be just like when they were working on the Costco, all the exit for Los Sosos Valley Road, when they were doing that, and then the traffic was backed up onto 101. We would have the same thing, I think. But I thank you all for listening, and those are just my concerns. And, again, I want to thank Mangano for helping us, Andy, and listening to us, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else like to address the commission?
Thank you, Chairman, members of the commission. Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates. I just wanted to advise you that we're here to address any of the questions that you may have about the project specifics, although we are not supposed to be engaging in discussion, but I want to make sure that you have accurate information. I'm here this evening with the owners of Subarea 1, Mr. Mike Panchel, Subarea 2, Mr. Andy Mangano, and Gary Kobaro, who is representing the Japanese Welfare Association. So thank you very much for your deliberation this evening, and we look forward to seeing you this summer.
Thank you.
I'm Minetta Bennett, 415 Allen Street, Arroyo Grande. Is this...
Thank you.
I've lived there forever on 415. I'm at the corner of Allen Street and Pacific Coast Railway Place, and nothing has been mentioned about... I'm concerned with the density of the development and everything, and I do live at the corner of Allen and Pacific Coast Railway Place, and nothing has been mentioned about how this impacts the traffic on Allen Street. We are already impacted by traffic on Cherry, and we will be more so if a lot of more houses and development come in. As it is, it's hard on Allen Street. It's a narrow street, parking on both sides, and when you get up to Traffic Way, there's commercial on both sides, and sometimes it is hard to get onto to Traffic Way. Also, a lot of people, me and a lot of people, when you go down and there's two-way traffic, you sort of wait till there's a free space to let somebody come by. A lot of the times it's hard to pass people on Allen with the traffic on, with parking on both sides. So I believe this should be looked into. And I ditto what Linda Osti said. She lives not too far from me. And I'm rambling. So thank you, commissioners and staff. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else like to address the commission?
Hi, Shirley Gibson, Halcyon, and I go to 415 Allen Street almost every day. So what I read most of the EIR on the website and on my iPhone, so it's complicated. The thing I wanted to reiterate is I know the city's kind of in love with infill, but I think the density is too high. The other thing I noticed in the report is that you did traffic surveys on 8 of the streets, and there was one done on East Cherry and Traffic Way, which existing is level of service C, and then there was a traffic study done on Fair Oaks Avenue and Traffic Way, which was a level of service D. And I'm wondering why there wasn't a study done of Allen and Traffic Way, because we're in between the C and the D, so we must be C minus D plus. And if you're trying to turn left from Allen onto Traffic Way to go southbound on the freeway, it's very difficult. And equally difficult is turning right if you need to get in the left-hand lane to turn onto Fair Oaks Avenue. Likewise, if you're turning left from Traffic Way onto Allen, that can be a problem. A lot of the drivers do not understand that keep clear designation. In other words, if people are stopped and there's a line of cars, they're supposed to keep that area clear. Well, you may try to turn left and one lane has stopped, but the other people don't understand. And so it's a big mess and kind of dangerous. You have to really pay attention. And that's hard when the high school kids are all there. So I would appreciate if there could be follow-up on Allen and Traffic Way and also on Pacific Coast Railway and Allen Street, because it's hard to believe that there's not going to be an increase in traffic. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else like to address the commission? Okay. I'll bring it back to comments.
And I'd like to just wrap a couple things up for your benefit a little bit, too. We did do a little search on the water question. We're able to answer that, I think, pretty clearly. 36.22 acres is the total. Subarea 1, that's the hotel component, is 13.8 of that. Subarea 2 is 19.7 of that. And subarea 3 is the remainder, which is a little under 3, something like that. I also want to point out a few things. There's a collective concern about different traffic issues. We'll make sure we address all those. For your benefit, we have tonight Nate Stong from OmniMeans, who did the traffic study. He's taking notes. If you need to clarify anything here, you can certainly ask him. He won't be ready with all the answers right now, but he is available, and we'll talk with him about all this. There's a variety of questions. I think there were one or two which I'd like to address sort of indirectly right now. There was a discussion about liking the reduced project alternative. I think the comment was, I'm glad they're talking about that now. To be clear what the alternatives really are, they're not proposing the reduced project alternative. They haven't changed their project in any way. What that is a requirement under CEQA to look at alternatives that mitigate one project impact or another. You need to look at alternatives. What would it take to reduce project impacts? So the alternative we looked at, we called the reduced project impact. It would require reducing the hotel component by about 30%. It would require reducing the number of homes by about a third to bring it down below the air quality thresholds to make it so that you avoid that impact, but you don't completely avoid the impact. You reduce it, and same with the traffic. So those are really intended to give you, the alternatives are really intended to give you a sense of what it would take to reduce the project if the goal was to address all environmental impacts. But keep in mind, that is not what the applicants are proposing at this time. Then there are a variety of other issues that we took good notes on, just so to clarify, to know that we heard everything. Discussion about two-story homes and visual issues. We know the applicants have been working with neighbors. We also know that the EIR addresses the project as originally proposed. So that means when the final version of the project comes out, it will not only try to address all the issues brought up in the EIR, but anything that comes up through public commentary or from Planning Commission or any other source to address things for a final version of the project. We heard a variety of issues about parking and traffic, and the density questions aren't really EIR questions per se, but really relate to the project, but we took note of that as well. So we're here to answer whatever questions you might have to the extent we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Since I would like to start on my left, John, you have any further comments for the EIR?
Well, this is really about building information so you can complete the EIR process. And what I was kind of hoping is you can share a little bit more to either the listeners or the public of where we are in the process. My understanding is we're out to public review. Public has opportunity to review it. I was kind of hoping letting the public know when that sunset is in terms of receiving comments that can be incorporated in your work.
Sure. No, I'm glad you brought that up because that's how I would have ended it anyway. But first of all, the comment period is 45-day period, ends May 26th. That means any letters, any comments we receive through May 26th will be responded to in the final EIR. After that date, you know, the comment period's over, so we'd really like to have everything by then. What that means by responding to them, then what we do is staff will work with the consultants, both Julia and her crew at AMEC Foster Wheeler, but also Nate and his crew at OmniMeans, to address all the concerns that are raised. That won't necessarily mean it changes the conclusions, but we'll address factually when people have a concern, how it's either addressed in the EIR, or if there are things that legitimately could be looked at that weren't looked at, we'll try to address those as well. It may or may not change the conclusions of the EIR, the mitigation measures, but once we get through that process, then we have what's called the final EIR, which is essentially the draft EIR, plus all the responses to the comments and any changes that came out of that. What that process then allows to happen, you have that. The applicants then have the benefit of knowing all the public input, and whatever changes need to be made to the project at that time, they would make. So in effect, they have what's a public hearing draft version of the specific plan that can be considered by Planning Commission and the Council that has the benefit of all the information that was put out. As you put correctly, it's information that's in the Environmental Impact Report, and at that point, the specific plan goes for potential project approval once we have the final Environmental Impact Report done. At this point, timing-wise, we're looking at later in the summer to be able to get to that step, and that's how the process plays out.
I just have a few comments. First, thank you. This is, on a good day, this is a long process, and I appreciate the information that I received the other day speaking with OASIS and the staff at OASIS and learning a little bit more about this. The only comments that I have tonight have to do with really parking. Parking really has an impact, obviously, on traffic, on intensity, on how many houses get built, how big is the hotel going to end up being, and things of that nature. And for me, what emerges really is, I'm going to say, a conflict between our historical habits and of having large lots and lots of room to park in front of our own house, and the emerging reality that we are living in a more urban environment and a desire to decrease our traditional dependence on the automobile and start using more public modes of transportation, or just getting out and walking more, using bicycles and things of that nature, where there is a lower need for the historical parking spaces that are out there. And we're in the middle of that in our wonderful little community and dealing with that, and that's not going to go away, so I know that that's going to be an issue. For me, when I look at that, Area 1 with the commercial development, just as a note, if that 4,000 square foot building is designated as a retail, then 16 parking spaces for a 4,000 square foot building is appropriate. If it's designated as a restaurant, and assuming it's going to be 2,500 square feet of public access area and 1,500 square feet of back area, they're going to require 25 parking spaces rather than 16. And the numbers that are on this draft EIR are really not adequate. So, and working with other restaurants in the area that we're fortunate enough to see them be very, very successful, I think parking in that, specifically in that commercially zoned sub-area 1, is going to need to be really addressed and looked at. Obviously, this is all conceptual at this point. We don't have a single hotel room or a hotel there, but I caution the owners to, even in their preliminary planning, start looking at overbuilding the site and under-addressing the parking needs on site. That's all I have. Look forward. People are welcome to contact me, as well as the staff or anybody else if they've got comments. But it is important that I think we encourage public input and comments in this period in order to really be able to, to be as thorough as we possibly can in making decisions that need to be made in addressing the mitigations. Thank you.
Mr. Payne?
Yeah, my comment again is back to the traffic circulation. Not so much on Traffic Way, but at Garden Street, where the traffic from the residential units are going to come out on Cherry. I can see them filtering down through the existing historic residential zoning area, down Garden Street, and maybe over to Mason by Ide to get take their children to school. So, the traffic circulation that we've focused on has basically been on Traffic Way and East Branch, but it won't take long before residents find that that's an easier path to get through and maneuver through that residential area to get over to Paulding Middle School. And I don't know how you can eliminate that because that's a public road, but I just wanted to bring it up as a concern. I've owned property in that area, and I know that people find the shortest route to get where they want to go, and especially if you can avoid the heaviest traffic area, they're going to go that way. So that was my comment. And so I don't know whether anything's been looked at on Garden Street at that point.
Thank you.
Your turn.
If you like, actually, we have Nate Stong here from OmniMean. He might be able to just address that question pretty directly.
Well, I can just say that the traffic study that is in support of the EIR, that's attached and available for review, correct? And so within that, we've got the trip distributions that are assumed for the project, and a certain number go out Cherry to the east, some go up traffic. I can say from memory that we did not assume there would be cut-through traffic through that historic neighborhood. So that's something that we could look at.
Yeah, they're already impacted by that with the two existing subdivisions that are there. To the,
we'll talk with the city staff and maybe do a site walk and see what's going on. And the identification of study intersections was also done through consultation with city staff. So, we're looking at the major intersections, Traffic Way, Fair Oaks, Cherry Street, and Cherry Avenue and Traffic Way. So the minor street intersections, if we're looking at level of service on either end, and then those in-between intersections are presumed to function comparably.
Quick question before you leave.
Sure.
Obviously, you heard from the public regarding a couple of the other streets, Allen, and that's not an issue addressing that. Obviously, you got the data that's already been created. And then another question I had is the solution. Obviously, there's going to be a problem, and then there's a fair share that's being proposed for their fair share to go towards the solution. But what happens in the interim? Is there anything that can be provided in the EIR document that is sort of a partial solution before the full solution is realized?
We did analyze that in the EIR. There's the existing plus project, and then there's we actually do a short-term scenario, approved pending projects, and then approved pending projects plus project. And then that's actually, I believe, the scenario where we identified two mitigation measures, the signalization of Traffic Way and Fair Oaks. And then there's a near-term mitigation at West Branch that would add a second southbound turn lane, an exclusive right turn lane, because the queue builds up pretty heavily. And so allow those right turn movements. That would require restriping West Branch. And it's shown in the traffic study, modification of the curb return on the northeast side of West Branch to allow that lane, that receiving lane, gets a little shorter as you turn northbound from West Branch.
Okay. So that's clearly shown then in phasing in those different.
The near-term mitigations are in there, and then cumulative impacts, that's the final scenario we look at, 20 years in the future, general plan build-out, and then plus project. And that's what we're looking at. Julia talked about the roundabouts and other alternatives were looked at, and they're summarized in the traffic study. Thank you. Sure. Any other questions before I depart?
I've seen draft EIRs and EIRs for the last 20 years, and this is one of the most comprehensive ones that I've seen. Very well put together and very, very professional. And I really appreciate that, and I'm sure the community will too when they get into it and start analyzing it. A lot to go through. 830 pages. That's what my computer says.
Can you imagine how it was for Julia and her group to put it together right there? Yeah. No, we appreciate that too. Staff appreciates Julia's work on this as well.
I had one more question.
Sure, go ahead.
And I just picked it up because I wrote it so small. On the park issue, can you clarify that for me? On the size, it was like you need up to or an additional 0.21 acre park. Was that a suggestion for the park to get bigger, or is that to provide it somewhere else, or is that an in lieu fee, or is that a...
Well, while Julia's pulling it up, and she can tag team on this, really it's a construct based on park standards that are required in the general plan. It's a mathematical issue. So the idea is, does the project as proposed have enough land based on the number of people who would be generated here, and it's short mathematically by 0.21 acres. So the idea is, okay, to make it in compliance with city standards, got to find a way to, in some fashion, address more parkland. How that's done, where that's done, that's in the design details right here. But conceptually, it's inconsistent from a math perspective.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Any other comments from the commissioners? Okay. Thank you very much. Looking forward to seeing you back.
Commissioner Keene, just one more plug. For those who may be watching, again, I would strongly encourage, as you did, as the commissioners just did, additional questions or comments to come into city staff or commissioners who would forward it to city staff. This objective here, again, is to identify and disclose particular impacts. And as folks are hearing some questions, I'm sure they'll be generating others. Every question will generate a question. So I imagine that this discussion will generate some additional questions or concerns, and those need to be heard. And the date we need to hear those by is May 26th, 5 p.m., May 26th. And then the contact information is on the screen. Thank you very much. And there'll be additional opportunities to comment on the project itself, but again, the objective here is to collect comments and concerns and questions and needed clarifications on the particular impacts that have been identified in the report. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to item 10, notice of administrative decisions. Is there any questions or comments on the...
None.
Commissioner Back, do you have any?
I've been on the third one, the Briscoe Road. I'm assuming that's allowed density to put 2 units on a single family.
I'm sorry, my mic wasn't on.
I don't understand this. Is it just one duplex with 2 units on it, or is it two new two-story duplexes? So that would be 4 units.
Right.
How many? Is that what it is? Four units.
Little. Yeah. My question was density, because when I read it, I got really confused. Like, all of a sudden we're quadrupling the density of a single-family lot, or I just wanted more clarification.
Yeah, it is two new two-story duplexes, and it is in the multifamily zone, and it does meet the density for that.
Thank you.
Okay, I had that one highlighted too, and then the cherry sales thing. It says Walmart. Is that at Walmart or in that shopping center, or what does that mean? Where is it actually going to be located?
It's located in a couple different locations, and as to where in the Walmart parking lot it's located. I believe it's near the store entrance, but I would have to confirm.
Okay. I think that's where they've done it in the past. I've seen them there.
Yeah, I remember having a problem with some. In the past, there's been a problem with having it there at Walmart, but I don't have a problem with it. I just wondered if that, when it says Walmart, whether it actually means Walmart or the shopping center, since a lot of people refer to that as Walmart.
And I believe it is near the entrance of the Walmart store. If it's different, I'll notify you.
Okay. Any other comments on the...
No.
Okay. Commissioner Communications, anybody, any commissioners have any comments or staff communications?
I have nothing further this evening.
13, adjournment.
Adjourn.